The angry patches of moist rash had dried out and begun to fade. Robledondo's stables were the best-kept Oates had ever seen, but he realized it wasn't simply the stall emitting a fresh aroma. It was Ugfuck.
"My hog smells like flowers," Oates said, stooping to inspect closer. "And his sweat scale is nearly gone. I ain't ever been able to clear that up."
Oates straightened to find Manrique coming over. His steps were hesitant, but an excited expression had taken over his flat-nosed face.
"Calendula," the prince said. "A blossom from Tradria. I had some here, dried. Ground up and revivified with honey, it makes a promising salve. It was difficult to apply because he kept trying to eat it."
"I just wager he did," Oates said, looking again with awe at Ugg's healthy hide. "I'm damn grateful."
"I'm afraid it's not a cure," Manrique said, stopping just shy of entering the stall. "The affliction will always be with him, yet it can be relieved in this way."
"Afraid there ain't many Tradrian flowers in the lots."
The prince slumped, crestfallen. "Of course.
But hells if we won't be glad of them while we're here, eh, Ugg?"
"That's his name? Ugg?"
the prince asked, a smile twitching his lip.
"I had wondered."
"Ugfuck,"
Oates nodded. Manrique flinched and sputtered.
"Pardon?"
Oates gestured at the entire hog.
"Because he's ugly as fuck."
"Yes, I see."
"Reckoned everyone else was going to be calling him that. That's the way mongrels are in the hoofs. So I just went ahead and gave it to him proper. Robbed their quivers, I reckon, was what I meant to do."
"Did it work?" Manrique asked. Oates thought about it.
"Mostly. Them that tried to insult him worse, I just threatened to punch. Or did punch."
The prince shuffled away a step.
"Well, I think he is wonderful."
"Me too,"
Oates said, smiling and knuckling Ugg between the eyes. He stepped out of the stall and pointed to the barbarians penned just outside the stables.
"Of course, you got some of the best pigs I ever seen."
Manrique straightened.
"Oh, thank you."
Mention of the animals sent the prince moving toward their pen. Oates walked along beside him.
"They ever been ridden?"
he asked as they reached the rail. Frails did not often possess the strength to master a hog.
"Not since coming to Robledondo," the prince replied. "They were broken to the saddle in Corpulanos. I bought them after the races, 2, or is it 3? Matre, yes, 3 years ago now."
Oates leaned on the fence to look at the hogs.
"Races?"
"The hippodrome built by Emperor Torozyphos is still used for such things,"
Manrique replied, as if that answered it.
"These 4 were injured, fated to be slaughtered, so I bought them."
"Wouldn't know they were ever hurt to look at them,"
Oates said truthfully.
"You got a gift, Manrique."
From the corner of his eye, Oates saw the man shift uncomfortably.
3 years, though, spoiled as they've been, they'll either be easy as a lamb to saddle, or they'll murder you to keep it off, depending on the animal. Each will be different. Best not to try, being earnest.
"Crafty says he will need one for his use soon," Manrique said. "Perhaps I should try to dissuade him."
Just saying the word was a struggle for the prince. The notion seemed to make him sick. "He'll be fine," Oates muttered, remembering that Crafty had come to the lots having never ridden a hog. Fat fuck had even refused a saddle. Jackal had thought he would be dumped on his lard-laden ass, but the wizard had ridden all the way to the old maiden without trouble. He's got a gift, too.
"Do you know him well?"
"We don't know anyone well outside our hoof," Oates said, for lack of a better answer. "Just the way of things in the lots."
Manrique stared into the hog pen and gave a shallow nod.
A thought struck Oates. "You called him Crafty."
Manrique grew nervous.
"Should I not? That is what he insisted I call him when we met, since we were kin. He said, through my nephew, we were near enough in years to be brothers, and his brothers call him Crafty."
Oates looked down to scrape his boot on the fence railing, hoping he hit his grimace in time. Brothers? Hells. No matter what Fuchtus claimed about Crafty, Oates felt a powerful urge to go break the wizard's smiling face that very instant.
It's the best name for him, Oates muttered.
He looked up and forced a smile.
Like Ugfuck. They don't leave anything for folk to guess at.
And your name? Manrique asked. I was told when you arrived, but forgive me, I was distracted.
Oates huffed. Reckon that can happen when a gaggle of half-orcs arrives at your door uninvited?
He hooked a thumb at himself.
Oates.
Oates, yes, thank you. And you are welcome here. You were not uninvited. Crafty told me to expect the arrival of the Lotland's emissaries.
Oates noticed the choice of words. Crafty told him, not asked.
Never reckoned we'd be getting help from a blue blood, he said. Not to sound an ingrate, but why are you doing it?
Manrique did not look at him. His big hands grasped the fence railing, twisting slightly forward and back.
My father used to speak of Ulwundulas, the land he relinquished. It nearly cost him his crown. He was embittered by that failure. It would have been the largest of his reign, if not for...
The prince trailed off.
Not for what? Oates asked.
His sons.
Manrique shook his unkempt head, pushing out a nervous chuckle.
Not sure I follow. How does aiding my chief fix that?
Oh, it doesn't.
The prince lifted a knuckle to brush his flattened nose.
My father wanted to subdue the Lots from the moment of their creation, to bring them back into the kingdom. But he lacked the strength. His hope was that my brother would, but Giron was...
Mad fuck crazy.
Manrique ducked his head.
Not enough to fight a war with your kind. My father kept trying to turn his viciousness south, but battle did not interest Giron. He relished smaller horrors. And I am, lacking in every way for such a venture. But I've always wanted to see Ulwundulas.
What you've got here is a far sight better, believe me, Oates said.
I know what Roble Dondo is,
Manrique said softly, though there was an ember in his voice. Oates waited for more, but the man merely gazed morosely at the hogs.
What was this Frail doing? Why was he allowing Crafty to wield him against the crown?
Was Manrique as mad as his brother? Far as Oates could see, the man gained nothing throwing in with the hoofs and conspiring with Tyrkanya. Did he even know about Crafty's sorcery? About the Black Womb? Did he truly believe he was Crafty's uncle, or was he just too craven to challenge the sham? Knowing he should leave it alone, that he should allow Alamra to deal with the infuriating threads of the wizard's plots, Oates told himself to walk away. Yet all the questions, all the warnings, were cooking on his tongue, a heartbeat from being served steaming to the prince. He was spared from that fool-ass urge by the arrival of Brittu. The dwarf sauntered toward the prince with a rolling gait, Thresher a few paces behind. Brittu looked up at Manrique, pinching his own throat with two fingers and a thumb before making a wiggling motion.
Here?
The man said, voice strained as his eyes jerked across the compound toward the gate. Without another word, he ducked his head and hurried away, his heavy stride directed at the lodge. Oates shot a questioning look at Thresher.
Some chinless frail on a spavined horse at the gate, she explained. Got the crown's banner plus his own, 4 men with him.
Gather the hoof.
It didn't take long. Most of the bastards had seen Thresh come through with the dwarf and realized something was brewing. They met near the bull's pen in the rough center of the compound, all save Sluggard, who was taking a turn as Crafty's shadow.
Anyone seen them? Oates asked.
Culprit pointed.
There.
Crafty and Sluggard came around from behind the caretaker's bunkhouse.
I understand we have visitors,
the wizard proclaimed as he drew closer.
And sooner than expected.
Brittu passed by on his way back to the gate.
Go with him, Fuchtus, Crafty said. Make sure Volador's men remain outside.
The demon moved off to catch up with the dwarf, his fleshy azure tail giving Oats goose flesh. Soon, a lone rider came into the compound. Thresh was right about the horse. It was a miserable beast, clomping along on swollen joints. The man upon the aged mare's back was deeply tanned, his mustachios forming a lintel over a small mouth. Thresh was right about his chin, too. This frail's neck began after his lower lip. He wore no armor, only the doublet and tight-fitting hose of a noble. An empty scabbard hung from his belt, the absent sword no doubt in the hands of Fuctus or the Muros outside the gate.
Anselmo Volador, Crafty told the hoof quietly. Tax collector for Her Majesty. A hand of ice in a glove of velvet.
The horse is a cruel touch, Alamra said.
Crafty gave her a knowing look.
What about the horse? Culbert whispered.
Manrique loves animals, Alamra replied. The ailing horse will unsteady him.
Volador reined up, but did not dismount. He cast a placid look at the mongrels and turned back to await the prince, coming now with a small coffer cradled to his belly.
Highness,
Volador said, coughing slightly as he dismounted. He doffed his burgundy cap to reveal thinning hair. A groom stepped forward to take his horse in hand. Manrique halted, leaving a conspicuously long distance between himself and the other man.
The mayordomo keeps our collection at the castle, Manrique said, sounding peevish.
I come on other business, Highness,
Volador replied, his voice quavering as he held back another cough. Manrique's large hands fidgeted with the box.
What business?
Let us speak in private, Highness.
Manrique hesitated.
And now we see,
Crafty whispered.
The prince began to turn toward the lodge, but as his body swung to face the hoof, he paused. His eyes darted up, glanced off the bastards, and retreated again to the ground. But not before looking Oats in the eye for the barest of moments.
I am more comfortable out of doors, Manrique muttered. We will speak here.
Volador rose slightly on his toes and cleared his throat.
As you will, Highness. Her Majesty is concerned for you. Distressing news has come to her ear. She fears you've been preyed upon by foreign culls and half-breed ruffians. She wonders if perhaps your good nature does not allow you to extricate yourself from their clutches. In this, she would help you, if you desire. You have but to say the word, and you will be rid of these uncouth influences.
That is kind of her, Manrique replied, still unable to address the tax collector directly.
However, I am in no such need, nor danger. Envoys of Tyrkania and the Lotlands have requested my patronage. I have given it.
Volador's head cocked a bit to the side.
Why, Highness?
Manrique opened the coffer and looked at its contents. He drew out a ring, forced it down the length of a prodigious finger, and snapped the box closed. At last, he looked at Volador squarely.
My intention is to introduce them at court, as is my right as Prince of the Royal House of Trastorius. You can tell Her Majesty, you can tell Ursaria, that we will await her invitation.
Crafty spun fluidly around, brimming with triumph. He offered a hand to Alamra.
Come, let us make our introductions.
The gold in his smile flashed.
I hope you are rested, my friend bastards, for we are soon to duel with monarchs.
Chapter 29 Majirit, City of the Queen, Heart of Hisparta, and the biggest fucking place Oats had ever seen.
Hell's overburdened, Culbert said, wrinkling his nose. You can smell it from here.
He wasn't wrong. The hoof viewed the city from the west, their vantage provided by the final puckers of the Sierra Dracos behind them. The wind was laden with odors, too muddled to discern, but it was a long trot from Pleasant. The walls surrounding Majirit stood upon broken hills footed by the Korosmano River, a thin thread of silver shining through gaunt tableland. Two bridges bore the road across the water on their backs. The more central was a flat, elegant span supported by marching arches inherited from the Imperium. It was filled with travelers coming and going. The other bridge was humpbacked and shorter due to the river narrowing as it bent around the flank of the hills. It stood empty beneath the western end of the city, where the hills were highest and crowned by a squat fortress. The bridge itself was guarded by straddling towers at both ends. The road beyond wound steeply up to a fortified gate bulging from the shadow of the citadel. "The Furiosa is the Queen's private access to the city," Sluggard said. "Any who attempt to cross it without dispensation are killed."
"Don't suppose Plucker's got that," Polcat said with a smirk, casting an eye back to Manrique, still traversing the rough terrain behind the hoof with Crafty and Fuctus.
Their journey from Vocastria had brought them through the mountains, their guide the prince himself. In truth, the man was a skilled rider, but no frail on a foal would ever outpace a hoof rider on a long trek across unforgiving ground, and, with the end in sight, the bastards had pulled ahead. The past days had revealed a different Manrique. His habitual reluctance vanished in the saddle. He led them through the passes with unfaltering surety, keeping to himself at the front. He brought no one from Robledondo to serve him, and saw not only to the care of his horse, but those ridden by Alamra and Fuctus as well. The demon had been given use of a hardy, gray draft animal to bear his large frame. No stirrup would accommodate his cloven feet, but their lack did not hamper him, neither did the need to carry his axe, which was too large to strap to his tack. Crafty had indeed taken one of the prince's hogs as mount, and, as Oates wagered, had no trouble with the beast. The bastards quickly named the pig Muck Shovel.
"Because it's used to moving a heap of shit," Polcat delighted in informing Crafty.
The Sierra Dracos contained no settlements that the hoof saw, though they only slept beneath the open sky once. Caves used by Highland shepherds and known to Manrique sheltered them the other three nights. He spoke little during their rests, contenting himself with the playing of a lute. Music wasn't commonly heard in the lots. Oates had only ever encountered a few wandering minstrels at Sancho's, the sort of scoundrels with nowhere else to go and not enough grit to survive once they were there. None played or sang with Manrique's skill. Unlike the desperate rakes at Sancho's grasping for coin or cunt or a free meal, the prince played deftly, humbly. If it were possible to pluck the strings silently, Oates had no doubt Manrique would have. The rapt attention he received made him uncomfortable. Crafty's clapping, Alamra's gentle and earnest praise, Sluggard's requests for certain ballads, Culprit's questions about the songs and the instrument, all of it made him squirm, duck his head. But none of it stopped him. The balm of the music was a greater necessity than his need to hide. A man dying of thirst would crawl through a pit of scorpions and serpents to reach water. By the fourth day, Manrique wasn't riding so far ahead. They'd left Robledondo a day after Anselmo Volador. The tax collector would be taking the roads, but Manrique set off over the mountains. It was a shorter route, and faster for one who knew the passes as well as the prince.
"Arriving ahead of the messenger bearing word that we're coming," Thresher had said. "That's either really damn clever, or it's going to get us killed."
"Crafty's notion, sure as shit," Polcat said.
Oates agreed. Manrique and the wizard had shut themselves up in the lodge after Volador departed, and not emerged until the next morning, proclaiming the start of their own journey. The bastards were already in the saddle, thanks to Alamra's intuition. Now with Majirit before them, she took in the city as if studying a battlefield.
"What are you thinking, Rue?" Thresher asked.
"Small," Alamra replied.
Culprit stared at her, astounded, and pointed at the flood of rooftops, spires, and smoke plumes sprouting behind the walls.
"Small? That?"
Alamra raised her eyebrows, shrugged.
"Compared to Sardis, Yes. Sluggard smiled. It contains wonders enough, Cole. Don't fret.
Bring me all the horrors, Polecat said, lifting his nose to the wind.
Crafty and Fuchtus caught up and rode by without a word, continuing across the stretch of low hills cascading down to meet the road. The bend of his course suggested they were not going to the Queen's Bridge. Farther back, Manrique had slowed to a halt. He sat his horse and gazed at Majirit, the sight of the city further weighing down his already slumping shoulders.
Who wants to wager he'll turn around? Polecat said.
What will that mean for us if he does? Sluggard asked. No one answered.
Hey!
Culprit called out so suddenly it made the rest of them jump. The young mongrel made a coaxing gesture at the prince.
Plucker! Come ride with us! Likely to get lost down there without you.
Hells, Thresher whispered. He's sure to tuck tail now.
Manrique nudged his horse forward. Culprit gloated in the face of his brethren's stares.
A smile worked the first time, he told them. Figure just fucking asking is an even better invitation.
The prince rode up to them, looking for all the earth like the city was about to eat him.
Alamra dipped her chin at Crafty's back.
Despite Uhad's unceremonious approach, I think it would be best, my prince, if we entered the city together.
Manrique only gave a doleful nod.
True bastards, Oat said. Let's show these civilized frails a mongrel hoof.
They took his meaning, forming up around Alamra and Manrique. Cat and Culprit took the front, Oats and Sluggard the wings, Thresher and Hood the flanks. Manrique produced the small coffer from his saddlebag and retrieved from it a thick gold chain bearing a medallion. The bull of Hisparta stood embossed upon the face. The prince draped the chain over his shoulders, mouth turning down further as it settled. Culprit turned in the saddle.
Which bridge?
The Emperor's, Manrique murmured.
That's the long one, right? Culprit asked. Not the death if we ain't welcome one.
Let us hope so, the prince said.
They spurred toward the city, hogs surrounding horses. They caught up to Crafty just before striking the road, and the wizard eased his hog until he rode beside Manrique. Fuktu stayed out front on his sturdy horse. They had no banner, but a mighty thewed, half-naked, brazen-horned, blue-skinned demon holding a giant gilded axe preceded them better than any colorful rag. They kept their mounts at a walk, passing wains and ox-carts and footsore peddlers. The folk on the road made way with curses and breathy oaths, those that weren't rooted and dumbstruck. One merchant saw them coming and forced his line of porters carrying hods of charcoal off the road. As the hoof passed, Oats looked at the soot-covered laborers and met the wide eyes of a half-orc. The words boiled up in Oats, unbidden, but he let them free.
"Live in the saddle! Die on the hog!"
the true bastards answered without pause, announcing the arrival of the Lotlands to the Queen's City. They crossed the bridge without challenge, but their presence stirred all those they passed. Many going away from the city turned around. Boys sitting on the bridge's rails abandoned their fishing rods to run beside them. Fuchtus kept an unhurried pace, allowing the spark of their appearance to send a blaze racing ahead. The city gates, larger than the Castile's, were a clogged morass of the curious and confused by the time they reached them at the top of the hill. Mule teams and wine carts were beleaguered islands in a flood of folk, all shouting questions, yelling abuses, thrown amuck by the wildfire of fresh rumor. Fuchtus pressed on, his fearsome appearance and the size of his horse acting as a plow. The throng stumbled and shambled out of the way, the heat in their raised voices intensifying. Armed men pushed through from the other side, emerging from the shadows beneath the gate, the hafts of their spears shoving and butting the more stubborn aside. Breaking through, their scowls melted as they beheld the Jevadi.
"Move this rabble from our path," Fuchtus rumbled. "They impede the entrance of their prince."
The men-at-arms gawked, eyes moving swiftly but seeing nothing as they struggled to understand. The jostling crowd snapped one frail out of his stupor,
He spun and pushed a furious merchant on his ass, turning back to the hoof with a set jaw and new resolve. His stare settled on Manrique, a man on a horse, something he could reconcile. The next instant, he saw the medallion.
"Clear the way!"
he shouted at his fellows. Oates didn't relish seeing people battered and bullied aside just so he could pass. By the look of him, neither did Manrique. It took some doing, but a path was forced through the crowd, and the riders entered Majirit.
"I'll summon a proper escort," the guard said.
"He has one," Crafty replied.
"But those arbalests!"
Fuctus did not slow. Leaving the men and the gate behind, they proceeded into the pungent, bustling embrace behind the walls. The invading swell of tradesmen and merchants were met with a counter-skirmish of beggars, buskers, and urchins. But the presence of the hoof blunted the fervor of the assault, the pleas for coin, and offers to act as guide stalled by the spectacle of hogs and foreigners. Still, they were at the mercy of the city's inbound current. Slow-moving carters and their jostling wares frustrated the drovers, splitting the streams of livestock destined for the slaughter yards not far from the gate. Finally, they pushed into a plaza where rag-pickers and soap-sellers hawked their goods, decrying the stock of their competitors in the same breath. "The hells?" Culprit marveled, spying a woman, stripped to the waist, with an ill-butchered piece of meat tied around her neck, being driven through the plaza and lashed by a pair of men. As they passed, Oates thought he saw a pair of testicles sewn onto the cut.
"Caught trying to pass you for beef,"
one of the men kept calling between licks with his switch.
"Caught trying to pass you for beef."
Oates and Culprit shared a look, a laugh, and a shake of the head.
"I love it here already," Polcat declared.
The twisting streets had no end. They passed through an entire section of the city devoted to the making of pottery, its inhabitants rendered ghosts by the clay dust. Oates spied a mongrel working hard at a kiln and couldn't help but wonder if this was the place the clay master had first been in servitude in some dim past when he was known by another name and had yet to mount a hog, fight a war, and endure the torture of the plague's creation. Beyond the earthenware district, Oates had a moment's alarm when he caught sight of a group of steel friars coming down the lane. With their long beards, plain cassocks, and baldrics bearing sword and buckler, they were indistinguishable from the goats he'd fought in El Arena. No chance they could be, though, this far from the outmarches. There were more temples bordering the city's plazas venerating more gods than even Knuckle Child could name. Still, Oates kept waiting for one of the steel friars to point an accusing finger and proclaim him the merciless cunt who had set fire to their brother. They gave him a look, but it was no different from the one the hoof received from every frail in Majirit. Their mounted band dragged a spell of bewilderment everywhere they went, stuttering the shouted enticements of merchants, slowing the swaggering steps of richly dressed men, muting the laughter and singing coming from dozens of taverna patios. Twice they were stopped by patrols of city guard, but the sight of Manrique's medallion quashed any further hindrance to their passage. The streets leading westward took them higher. As the cobbles climbed the hills, the air became cleaner, the bustling plazas yielding to gardens. The street sellers vanished, and the houses of the gods bowed to dwellings of the nobility. At last they halted at a low wall fronted by fruiting lemon trees. Manrique came down from his horse and made to knock upon the door set into the wall, but paused, leveling his raised fist to push the door inward without resistance. His face settled into a sad resignation as he led his horse through. Oates and the others dismounted and led their animals into a yard littered with discarded wine jugs. A three-story house stood before them. The first floor comprised of a columned gallery with an open inner courtyard beyond. A small stable sat to the right of the yard, its thatching in dire need of replacing.
"The animals will need to share stalls," Manrique said, taking Alamra's horse and his own.
What fodder remained in the empty stable was rotted, and the troughs were dry. I'll sort this, Manrique mumbled. The bastards untacked their hogs and got them sorted into the four stalls. It was cramped, forcing Ugfuck and the draft horse to be tied up outside.
We'll see to them better shortly, Manrique promised, gesturing toward the house.
They went through the arch into the court. Laughter drew their attention up to the veranda on the second floor. Someone ran by, a woman from the sound of the giggling. Next came the slight tinkling of bells. More laughter. Across the court, a naked woman scampered briefly into view, casting looks over her shoulder as she darted from one open room off the gallery to another. She failed to notice the perplexed half-orcs, scowling demon, and dispirited prince. Oates reckoned the mask on her face, fashioned into the likeness of a rabbit, may have impeded her vision. A grinning polecat moved to pursue, but was stopped by Thresher grabbing his ear. They heard the tinkling again as a man wearing nothing but a blindfold ran down the gallery just to their left. The bells were dangling from his cods. Culprit had to dodge out of the naked frail's eagerly rushing path, but the man sensed the motion and changed course, laughing as he darted to give chase. His widely flailing and groping hands slapped Fuchtus's bare midriff. The demon swatted the man to the ground with a lazy backhand. Oates didn't think he'd ever seen anything move as gracelessly as a naked man with bells tied to his nut basket trying to remove a blindfold after being knocked on his bare ass. Eventually, he worked the rag up to his forehead. Seeing the assembled intruders, he gave a constricted little cry and tried to crab crawl away, bells clinking.
Lucas, Manrique sighed, drawing the man's attention.
Rique? Came the squeaking reply. The naked frail shot to his feet. He was of an age with Manrique, but there the similarities ended. Lucas was lithe, handsome, and dark-haired, a stark contrast to the cumbersome, homely, tow-headed prince.
I didn't expect you back. When did you arrive?
Just now, of course. I hope. Oh, if only you'd sent word, I'd have had a feast laid. And half-orcs. Madre, you do surprise. How long will you be staying?
The babbling drew no fewer than five curious, unclad women, all wearing masks, peeking around corners and over the upper verandas. And those were just the ones Oates could see.
Lucas, where are the grooms? Manrique asked.
I haven't owned a horse in years, Lucas replied, smiling as he shrugged with overwrought contrition.
I dismissed the stable hands.
Manrique's head lowered.
And how many of these women serve here?
Lucas's face scrunched.
Two?
Is my house now a brothel?
I see time has not made you less a bloodless moralist, Rique, Lucas said, slipping the blindfold off his head and letting it drop to the floor.
His smile was still in place, but his tongue had sharpened.
Do I get no thanks? No gratitude for keeping affairs here in your stead? For preventing greedy hands from taking what little is still yours?
Manrique shrank.
No, of course you do. I am grateful, Lucas. Truly. Then all is well, the naked man exclaimed, throwing both arms high as his smile waxed full of bright teeth. I will dress, and then you shall tell me everything. There is certainly a tale here I am anxious to hear. I wager not even the lovely forests of Balsane have given you a taste for wine, eh? No matter. Come, I'll drink, and you can talk.
Later, Lucas, please, the prince replied, stepping away from the man's outstretched arm.
I am tired. I want solitude. Please see to the comfort of our guests.
Guests? Lucas gave a small, scoffing laugh.
The half-breeds? Have you learned to jest at last? Surely these are only your newest exotic pets.
Oates felt his brethren stiffen, but none uttered a vexed word or made an aggressive move.
Guests, Lucas, Manrique insisted. I'll be in my chambers.
Lucas said, taking a sliding step after the prince on his bare feet.
Your chambers are not suitable just now.
Manrique's sullen stare darkened.
Lucas drew back, affronted.
You'd have me sleep in the servant's cottage?
You may prefer to live as a rustic, my friend, but not I. This could have been avoided if only you'd sent word.
Manrique held up his large hands to ward off further harsh words.
You're right. All is well. Do not be angry. I'm tired, Lucas.
This city has ever taxed you, Rique, Lucas said, his bitterness switching to sympathy quicker than a snake strike. Truly, I can't fathom what would cause you to come back. You know it's better when you stay away.
Crafty swept in.
After a cave for a chamber and pine cones for a bed, any room is a welcome comfort. Find you a place, uncle. When you emerge, all will be restored. Go, seek your repose.
Manrique let out a grateful breath and slouched off.
Uncle,
Lucas said, face curdled with confusion.
Rique!
He tried to go after the prince, but Crafty caught him in a one-armed, scooping embrace, turning him around.
We will let him rest, yes?
Lucas tried to resist, but for all his suet, Crafty was still a half-orc, and he manhandled the naked frail with ease, ushering him back to the hoof. The wizard reached into his robes, produced a coin purse, and slapped it into Lucas's chest.
We require feed for the animals, no grooms. I am certain my hoof rider friends prefer to tend their own hogs. You do not look starved or filthy, so I assume a cook, scullion, and chambermaid remain in service. We will need provender for all you see here, however, and for a week at the least.
Lucas paled.
A week?
Yes.
The purse contains sufficient coin. I trust you are long practiced in extracting the worth of your services from what remains. It would be best if you were swift.
Crafty released Lucas with a push toward the outer yard. The man spun, cradling the purse, slack-jawed.
You'd have me go now? He looked down at his nudity. As I am?
Lucas, Crafty chuckled. Since the day you left your swineherd father and embedded yourself in the prince's graces, I doubt you have ever shied from a reason to purchase new clothes.
How do you know?
Fuctus, please accompany our friend. For his safety.
The demon stepped forward. Lucas scrambled back, pointing a trembling finger.
I'll not go anywhere with that.
Fuctus seized the outstretched hand, wrenched the whining man around, and grabbed the back of his neck. Holding firm, he walked Lucas outside and across the outer court. The bells continued to tinkle.
Shameless leech, Crafty said with distaste.
Suckling at a trusting breast.
Yes, Alamra said.
Who would use the prince so?
Ignoring the barb, Crafty walked to the stairs at the end of the gallery and ascended. Polecat swaggered into the center of the inner court and put the blindfold on.
My turn, ladies! Got another pair of bells?
The whores were swept from the house. Three of the seven women claimed to serve there, but Alamra named two liars after a single glance.
Those weren't the hands of a laundress, she told a curious thrush. And the other? Her eyes were too bold for a servant.
The third proved to be the scullery maid, as evident not only by her cracked hands and downcast eyes, but by the fact that they found her clothed and hidden away in the kitchen. She gave her name as Guillaumar and was still a girl, but adept at keeping the house's plate from being pilfered when Lucas was distracted by his debaucheries. The cook was her father, away at the market fair in Anatorgus, to barter for Anvilis cheese. His name, she said, was Sancho.
What do you wager he's a greasy, coin-biting ass-peddler? Oates told Polecat, but his jest was met with little more than a huff.
Cat was in a sour mood after the whores left untouched. It wasn't long before others were filled with the same piss. They were days in that house. Once the stables were put right, there was little to do but wander the verandas and languish in the courtyards. Oates had to keep reminding his brethren not to get drunk, for Lucas kept an ample store of wines. Hells, it was all Oates could do not to drown in a jug or three.
There were rooms aplenty, more than he had ever seen outside of the kiln's hoof barracks. But those had been tiny cells compared to the bedchambers on the second floor of the city house. Still, there weren't enough for everyone to sleep alone, so the bastards doubled up. The third floor was devoted to the prince's chambers. Lucas was ousted, and Crafty installed. The wizard came down far more often than Manrique, though the man did visit the stables to care for the horses. If Lucas bore a grudge, he hid it well. He was jovial, especially when in Alamra's presence.
"His quick and flippant acceptance of our presence is the mask of a seasoned sycophant," she confided in Oates. "He is long acquainted with Manrique's peculiarities and knows how best to weather them."
"So he ain't a danger?" Oates asked.
"Not as long as his position isn't permanently threatened. He will abide, hoping our stay will be short. In many ways, he mourns the prince, a friend from boyhood, trusted, though entirely selfish. Manrique would be hard-pressed to remain here without him. Crafty knows this, or else I suspect Lucas would have been dealt with before we arrived."
"Is our stay going to be short?" "Been days, Rue. Polecat is a hair away from needing to be chained up. The damn forest was one thing, but trapped in this place is another. Sluggard is starting to crawl the walls, too, and I can't say I blame them."
"This is the game as it is played. If Crafty saw some advantage to our being seen in the city, he would be parading us around without hesitation. Yet he knows when to be patient. Make no mistake, he eluded Jackal not by his ability to run, but by knowing when to stay put. And Manrique is a potent yet fragile pennant. Unfurl him in too strong a wind, and he will tear free from the pole and fly away. Crafty is, wisely, waiting for the queen to make the next move."
Their eighth day in Majirit, she did. A herald arrived at the gate. Lucas admitted him into the house, and Manrique came down to the courtyard. The herald handed Lucas the thickest parchment Oates had ever seen, weighted by a heavy wax seal. Lucas presented it to the prince. Manrique broke the seal and hunched over the parchment as he read. Without a word, he gave it to Crafty, causing both Lucas and the herald to stiffen. Crafty's eyes danced over the missive. Looking up, he nodded at the prince.
"We will attend," Manrique told the herald.
The man cut a swift exit. Manrique's was even quicker. He vanished upstairs.
"We have been summoned," Alamra said.
It wasn't a question.
"Oh, yes,"
Crafty replied, giving her the message.
"To the castle?"
Sluggard asked, with a mixture of eagerness and worry. Alamra's brow gave the barest twitch as she read.
"To a tournament."
Chapter 30 Oates could still smell the soap in his beard. A late morning breeze played across his face as the true bastards rode northward through the city, sending cool wafts of lavender up his nostrils. The hoof all but shone. Their saddles were oiled, tack repaired, boots, brigands, and breeches rid of dust. Their swords were freshly whetted. But none carried a thrum. Stockbows were forbidden in the presence of the queen. There had been more than a little grousing, but Alamra was deaf to it. She insisted the thrums were left behind with the same calm fervor she used when ordering her brethren to bathe. Lucas arranged for a trio of tubs to be delivered to the foreyard. Hired men hauled water from a fountain in a nearby plaza none of the bastards had yet seen. Alamra and Thresher washed first while the brothers waited in the inner court.
"Which tub you use?" Polecat asked Thresh when she returned to the house damp and flush from scrubbing.
"That's where I want to soak myself."
"See if you can tell from smelling the water," Thresher replied.
Cat raced outside. "Let's go," Oates told Culprit, waving him along. That left Sluggard and Hoodwink for last. A good match. No chance Hood would say anything about Slug's mutilation. In earnest, neither would any of the rest. But Cull and Cat, Oates himself, would be hard-pressed not to look. Grievous wounds always held a grim fascination. A mongrel hoped never to suffer them, but those who did and survived became something of a talisman, as if beholding them offered some manner of protection, or at the least, some assurance that such horrors could be borne. Fool-ass hog shit, really, and not something Hood would succumb to. His were the only scars that could rival Slug's. Truth was, Sluggard was so eager to be free of the confines of the house, he didn't balk at all. The tournament had put a fire in him Oates hadn't seen since before Winsome fell. 2 days after the summons, the time had come. Lucas led, his velvet clothes as new and glossy as his horse. The faded and threadbare banner held in his gloved hand was an insult to his immaculate appearance, but the man carried it with convincing pride. Manrique rode beside, drab and ratty as his flag, though the rearing bull and dragon on the banner showed a heap more vigor. Alamra had no power to make him bathe, and the prince offered no chance, remaining hidden away since the summons. If Crafty made any attempt to improve his uncle's appearance, he failed. Manrique did not even wear the medallion he'd donned to enter the city. Behind the Blue Bloods came Crafty and Fuctus. The wizard was a gem mine turned inside out and made flesh, the jewels sparkling against a sky of garish silks. His thin braid of a beard was freshly oiled, a garnet anchoring the end. Fuctus was clad in nothing more than his waist wrap, though the plain white linen had been replaced with embroidered purple. Fresh plates hung within his inky mane, the bronze bangles swapped for gold. The bastards formed a spear point with Alamra at the tip. Her loose-fitting eastern garments were fine linen, but she had added no ornaments save a headscarf of deep green. Lucas had tried to gift her with jewelry, but was refused.
"My home is not a rich land," Alamra told him.
Lucas had grinned, some gaudy web of precious metal hanging limply between his hands.
"But Sardis is said to be the wealthiest place in the world."
"The lots are not," she said, "and they are the home I speak of, the home I am here to speak for."
Her hoof now sat tall in their saddles behind her. Their progress through the city was again marked by hundreds of eyes, but where they first entered unexpected, transfixing Majirit's daily roiling with their oddity, they now found the folk already stilled, awaiting their second appearance. People clustered at the edges of the lanes, loitered in alleys, leaned out from windows and over balustrades. They began as colorfully bedecked nobles in brocaded cloth, the men with mustachios and swords, the women with pearls and monstrous headwear. They tracked Manrique's passage with indifference, acting as if they had not stirred from their homes to watch him. The Tyrkanian mongrel and his demon startled and amused. The half-breeds on their swine drew nothing but scorn. The number of blue-blood frails who wrinkled their noses upon seeing the bastards made Oates smile.
"We've never smelled better," he told Ugfuck, rubbing the hog's meaty shoulder.
The walled stone houses on the heights of the hills were left behind. Steadily, the people increased in number, even as they diminished in wealth. The roofs of the guild halls were packed, the workshops and storefronts suckling at their teats, trading only in ogling this morning. The first of the jeers and shouted abuses began.
"Murdering mongrels! Ravagers! Rapers!
Filthy ash-colored animals!"
By the time the poorer reaches of Majirit surrounded them, the cries had become a humming hive, savage and rendered wordless by a horde of throats. Oates could see Manrique at the head of their little column, a big man on his small favored mare, riding through the hot hatred stoked by the sootskins he kept as company. The prince's head lifted for the first time since they set out from his house. He had cowered from the silent nobles, but in the face of the baying peasants, he straightened. They came to the walls. A gate yawned ahead, the mob kept away by a crescent of halberdiers backed by mounted cavaleros. One rider nudged his horse forward and exchanged words with Lucas, swallowed by the tumult from the crowd. They moved on, the cavaleros falling in around them as they proceeded under the gate, exiting the city. They emerged on the north side of the walls. The slope of the hills was shallower here, giving way to endless plain. The tournament grounds were evident below, a swath of field to the west. Oates could spy pavilions and paddocks and wagons and stalls all arrayed on the short side of the grounds at the eastern end. A patch of forest bordered the field to the west, the northward course of the river beyond. There was a break between the wood and the banks that kept drawing Oates's eye. He couldn't quite grasp why, but there was something queer about the trees. Queerer still was the verdant little rise stretching across the entire long north end of the field. The surrounding plains were the dun grass that fleshed most of Hisparatha, yet this fold was a lush green. Like the trees, the shape of the hill was unnatural. Both were too square. The cavaleros took them down the slopes on the slithering road. Reaching flat ground, they left the paving stones, striking west across the plain. Oates began to hear music. The pavilions grew closer. They were larger and more colorful than those he had seen camped outside the Castile, guarded by a long cordon of spearmen. A pair of platforms had been erected at either side of the trodden lane running between the pavilions. Minstrels stood upon them, coaxing sound from all manner of instruments that Oates couldn't name. He saw a lute or two. The rest were as mystifying as the foreign tongue of the singers. Anselmo Volador waited between the platforms, an army of servants arrayed behind him.
"Welcome, Highness," he said in his quivering voice.
It hardly carried over the music.
"Her Majesty wished me to convey her joy at your return to court. It is her hope that this celebration displays her affection. Our queen has tasked me with seeing to your every comfort. In this, I am fervently committed. Indeed, I descended at dawn to ensure you did not arrive ahead of me."
Polecat stifled a snort.
"If you would care to dismount," Volador continued, "I will show you and your guests all Her Majesty has prepared in your honor."
Manrique came down from his mare with all the enthusiasm of a slophead ordered to deepen a latrine pit. Lucas dismounted smoothly beside the prince. The bastards waited for Alhambra to give them a nod. The servants behind Volador leapt to the task of taking the animals in hand. Oates opened his mouth to say that frails couldn't handle hogs when he saw half-orcs among the grooms. They kept their heads bowed as they moved forward to take hold of the barbarian swine yankers.
"A paddock has been put aside for the mongrel steeds," Volador said. "You may plant your banner there, Highness. None will disturb them. You have the queen's promise."
"A kindness, Lord Volador," Alhambra said. "It is best, however, that one of our own remain close. Lot-born hogs are spirited and require a familiar hand. We would not wish anyone to suffer injury. Our brother Hoodwink will accompany them."
"As you will," Volador said. The grooms began to move off.
"Go on now," Oates told Ugg, patting his rump.
With a grunt, the big pig allowed the mongrel servant to lead him away. Hood followed behind, along with Lucas and the prince's banner. Volador extended an arm down the lane.
"At your pleasure, Highness."
Manrique stood a moment longer, gazing at the musicians, before striding past the chinless tax collector.
"Plucker looks like he's been told to shovel the shit pit," Polecat muttered.
"Just thinking that," Oates replied.
It was far from a shit pit. The pavilion sheltered trestles laden with food. Just one would have made a feast the hoof could not conquer, and there were 10 such bounties, each beneath its own house of gay canvas, each manned by liveried servants. The next dozen pavilions contained the drink, casks of wine, tons of ale, with more waiting in the wagons behind. Even as the hoof walked, serving men came out bearing flagons. Manrique shuffled by, but Crafty accepted a pair of sloshing tankards, passing one to Fuchtus. The wizard took a healthy pull. The demon drained his in a gulp and tossed the vessel. When Alamra reached for a proffered goblet, Sluggard, Polecat, and Culprit jumped to follow.
"Go easy, you fucks," Oates warned.
Alamra had forewarned the hoof not to imbibe more than she. Culprit took that a bit too baldly and was now watching her close, matching her every sip like a fool-ass reflection.
"Today is restricted to the court," Volador said as they reached the end of the lane.
He slowed a bit, gesturing to the empty expanse abutting the southern end of the tourney field, where men with mauls were busy driving posts into the ground, the beginnings of a fence.
"The rabble will be permitted at noon tomorrow in time for the first tilt."
"Tomorrow?" Thresher groused. "How long does this fucking thing last?" Volador led them around the eastern side of the field, bringing them closer to the mysterious green ridge. As the distance waned, Oates saw it wasn't a hill at all, but a terraced ramp covered in sod. There were 20 steps in all, each hosting a row of long tables bedecked with garlands.
"Your Highness and his guests will join Her Majesty to watch the champion's tourney," Volador said, turning the corner to lead them in front of the grassy stage.
They walked the length of the field toward the forest.
"Truly impressive," Crafty said, as they neared the edge of the trees.
Oates couldn't see what the hells the tubby fuck was gushing about. It was only a decent-sized wood. And then he saw it. The trees stood in a perfect line, so close their branches interlaced. Latticed screens threaded with ivy filled the scant gaps, creating a lush, hardy wall. The ground at the base of the trunks was moist, dark, and churned. Oates realized why the forest had looked so strange from the hill, why it was so square. It hadn't grown here, but been placed here. A tunnel of flowering vines led through the wall, flanked by guards. Volador stepped aside, allowing Manrique to proceed. The prince had to stoop through the tunnel. Moments later, Oates hunched over and entered the fragrant passage, patrolled by fat bees. His boots crunched on a path of crushed stone. He reached the tunnel's end and nearly collided with Polecat's rigid back.
"Fuck my mouth," the hatchet-faced mongrel said, jaw hanging open to receive the requested cock.
They stood in a shaded haven provided by countless trees. Gone was the regimented placement of the forest wall. The trees stood thick and scattered in imitation of a natural wood. Only it weren't natural. The evidence of the fakery could be seen in the piles of wood chips at the base of each trunk, the lack of leaf litter and fallen branches upon the grass. The lots weren't known for woodlands, but Oates was fair certain no forest was home to bears, boars, and deer, all wandering about looking puzzled, without fleeing or attacking the gaggle of men and mongrels walking wide-eyed in their midst. Volador led them deeper down the path. Soon, the entrance tunnel was lost from sight. The path ended at a small lake beneath the sheltering boughs. Not some muddy hole, the clear water revealed a basin of set stone, pike gliding and darting within. A ring of stone benches sat back from the lake, small tables placed between bearing ewers and goblets. Strutting peacocks and waddling geese made lazy progress through the surrounding trees.
"Her Majesty gathered her best wizards for this wonder, Highness,"
Volador told the prince, his quavering voice offering little weight to the claim.
"She knows you are most comfortable keeping the company of beasts."
"This is all sorcery?" Culprit asked, moving slowly toward a nearby stag, expecting it to flee at any moment. The animal stood tense, its muscles tremoring beneath its hide. It watched Culprit approach, head drawing back, but it did not run.
"This is more the work of many hands and strong backs than magic," Crafty said, taking in his surroundings with a languid turn. "Though the art of the communers is commendable, doubly so since they are not present to maintain the bewitching of these creatures,
However, I would not risk that, young culprit.
Culprit's hand paused halfway to touching the stag's neck.
Best to think upon them as delightful decoration, I am thinking, the wizard said.
Volador coughed into his fist.
Highness, Her Majesty would not risk your safety. This is the work of court magicians, not gully wizards. Or foreign charlatans.
If Crafty noticed the slight, he hid it well. Manrique did look more content than he'd been since leaving Robledondo, but Oates could see the prince warring with himself, the momentary marvel of the forest grappling with his bone-deep qualms.
You may be at ease here, Highness, Volador continued. The entire court will soon come to revel, to receive you warmly and bask in this triumph of Her Majesty's fondness for you. Now, if you will permit my brief absence, there are some final preparations I must attend. Do you want for anything, Highness? I can have your heart's desires sent with all haste.
Manrique shook his head and turned away to study the passel of brindled boar foraging impotently across the false forest floor.
Lemons, Crafty told Volador.
The man raised an eyebrow.
Lemons? A goodly number, Crafty said.
Bowing crisply, Anselmo Volador turned and walked back down the path.
Perhaps we should not have cleaned ourselves, Alamra said when he was gone, an edge to her voice. I would be loath to ruin the queen's wild tableau.
Crafty chuckled, but Oates was confused, and his wasn't the only brow that wrinkled.
What are you saying? Thresh asked. Nothing.
Rue.
Tell us, Alamra, Oates urged.
She swept a raised hand to encompass their surroundings.
We are the final decoration, the prize spectacle at the heart of the enchanted wood. Why else are we here when others are not, with no attendants to spoil the effect? The queen wishes her court to behold the savage half-orcs come from the Lotlands in the proper setting.
Along with the exotic monsters from Tyrkania, Crafty said, with a wink to Fuctus.
And the peculiar rustic prince who keeps such companions, Oates realized. Manrique was barely listening, slumped now on a bench and staring vacantly at the fish. Oates felt a simmering anger in his chest. Thresh was already boiling.
Fuck them, then, she declared, making for the path. Dacia, Alamra said,
but it did no good. She cocked her head at Sluggard, and he jumped to cut Thresher off.
Out of my way, Thresh warned, and cut around him.
Thresher,
Oates barked, putting enough punch in his voice to make her stop.
Stand with your hoof, bastard.
Thresh spun.
I ain't a curiosity for blue bloods to snigger at. None of us should be.
I warned this would be the way of it, Alamra told her. You were to steel yourself against Ola France.
Thresher took a long breath.
Tougher than I reckoned.
Yes, Alamra said. My own patience was flayed by this, I admit. I erred, speaking with such venom. So I shall remind myself, and you, that now is not the time for impatience or chafed pride. We approach the verge of our purpose in coming here to further our chief's aim of freeing the lots. Yet it will not be a swift conclusion, brethren. Nothing will be decided this day, save our failure if we succumb to rage.
And when it comes time to kneel? Sluggard asked.
Kneel, Polcat said. The fuck you mean, Neil?
The queen is coming, Sluggard replied. Here. So,
I ain't fucking kneeling, Polcat declared.
Culprit shook his head. Me either.
Brothers,
Alamra began, but Oates cut her off.
Pardons, Rue, but they're right. The mongrel hoofs don't kneel. Not to our own chiefs, and certainly not to no frail with a crown. The Claymaster may have died a twisted, mad fuck, but before that he carved the lots out of his Spartha's fist. I won't piss on that by kneeling. Fetch wouldn't suffer it either.
Then she may very well have sent us here in vain,
Alamra said.
Oh, I do not think so, Crafty said.
His eyes lit upon a man coming down the path bearing a bushel of lemons.
Ah, wonderful. You may set those down. We require nothing else.
The man did as he was bid and hurried off, unable to hide his relief at not being asked to remain alone with the frowning half-breeds and looming devil. Crafty went to the bushel and plucked a lemon.
You shall be far too busy to kneel, my friends, he said, bringing the fruit to his nose. And Ursaraya too dazzled by our Alamra and myself to insist.
Busy? Oates asked. With what? Crafty reached into his robes and, when it withdrew, flung a handful of chalky powder into the lake.
Cooking, he said. Fuktus, I believe I saw a fine humbameshi cedar down the path. It should serve our needs well, I am thinking.
The demon curled his lip.
You would have me use the sixth thunder to chop wood?
A weapon so ancient has been used for far baser tasks. How many centuries did it hang above Badra's altar in Ul-Kadim doing nothing? Crafty smirked. Are you truly going to refuse the chance to hit something with it?
Fuktu shrugged.
No.
Shouldering his golden axe, the demon strode off. The pike in the lake had grown listless. Crafty looked at the hoof.
Now, if some of you would not mind doffing your boots, I believe you will find these fish can be caught by hand.
The hells are you about, lard guts? Polecat asked,
though he was already standing on one foot to pull a boot off.
I am merely eager to show the court the tradition of the hoofs to, when guests, prepare a meal for their host.
We don't do that, Culprit said, his face becoming unsure the next instant as he looked to Oates. Do we?
No, Oates replied.
True, Crafty said, tossing him the lemon. But these noble frails do not know that.
Chapter 31 The favored blue bloods of Majirit came in a long line, already babbling about the succulent smells drawing them toward the lake. The coos and compliments were far too exaggerated. The sizzling fish, smoked over cedar coals and seasoned with lemon, was pleasant, but to hear the nobles carry on, it was an aroma sent by their countless gods.
They think it's something the queen's prepared, Sluggard said with a grin, keeping his attention on turning the skewers.
Ass lickers.
The bastards had set their fire on the far side of the lake, beyond the benches, but the gasping frails were loud with their praise, each trying to outdo the next. Kissing the queen's cunt, and she weren't even among them. Alamra had said she would come only after the court. It was likely to be a span. There didn't seem to be an end to the flow of swishing skirts and jaunty capes.
Those are some backy hats, Culprit said, whittling branches into skewers.
Hells, that fucker's fatter than Crafty, Polecat marveled at one tumescent man.
The wizard stood with Alamra at the path's end, bowing as they greeted every last frail. The boundaries of the lake steadily filled with larger peacocks that honked louder than the geese. The hoofs stuck to the fire, gutting and scaling the